Welcome to...
Wait, are you starting the intro?
No, I think
it's me. Yeah,
yeah, you go to yeah.
Welcome to Do You
Understand
the words that are coming out of our mouths? That's a podcast where we determine the strength of the bond between Black folks and Asian folks through food. Still says cinema on this copy here. What do we think about that? This is more cinema, yeah.
Yeah, of the four movies we watched, I think this is cinema.
The most cinema.
With quotation marks around.
I reject your scare quotes.
Okay.
Relative to what we've talked about.
Anyway, compared to the other folks.
Yes, my name is Andrew T.
I'm Cody Ziegler.
And we are here with our very excited guest, Jessica Gao.
Man, based on that intro, I think it's safe to say Black folks and Asian folks are not in sync.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't need this smoke.
I'll say listeners can't see that Gao is in a Garfield onesie costume. So we're getting smoke on not a Monday of all places.
It's actually a Tuesday. Halloween.
This is all getting cut. We're not talking about what day it is. Jessica, thank you for... we are also, if it sounds at all different, we are recording in Jessica's palace because she would not leave the house to do a podcast.
Yeah, man. Why would I?
I don't know.
To talk to you about Romeo Must Die? You're coming to me.
You're not knocking down our doors to talk about this? I find that very shocking.
And normally, we're breaking structure already because of the... normally, we have already at least sort of eaten the dish in question, but because of travel time and we'll just call it general Andrew incompetence, colon, expected amount... the dish is late as fuck.
Well, I mean, you're doing great, Andrew. You cook every single dish that we've done so far, but also I think you make the most complicated dish as far as like prep time and actual cook time.
Them catfish summer rolls were a real pain in the ass.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. I take my sugar back.
No, but this is, so today, we're gonna have to do a live reveal on air of kimchi spam mac and cheese. Jessica's looking at me like
I'm very skeptical.
That's funny. I don't see that you're drooling like we expected you to. You're not floating over to the window so to get a taste of that
feels
pie.
Like one ingredient too many.
Which ingredient is the one that's putting you over the edge?
Spam.
Surprisingly, it was the cheese.
I was going to say that kimchi may have pushed you over the edge.
No, I feel like kimchi mac and cheese would probably be pretty good. It's the... And I'm not a big spam person, but I think spam mac and cheese would probably be good too. But throw all three together, that's gilding the lily.
Well, this is the perfect movie. Yeah,
this is the lily could not be more gilded. And I went with a recipe that was like not a roux base; it was evaporated milk based. Also, listen,
I did suggest a roux.
Yeah, I know.
But you know,
I amalgamated some recipes, and it seemed like.
You're not on trial here, so it's good.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, no.
Answer the question, Mr. T.
People were just so enthusiastic about mascarpone and evaporated milk.
Mascarpone?
What is that?
It's a soft Italian cheese that's you use it for like tiramisu. You usually use it for desserts.
Yeah. So the cheeses are we got. The dairy is whole milk, evaporated milk, mascarpone, like a Costco block of sharp cheddar, a Vaughn's grocery store block of Colby and a pepper, but what's the Jack that's like the
Monterey
Jack? Yeah, whatever the fuck.
No Velveeta.
No Velveeta either.
Silent judgment from Jessica over here. It's really like jazz. It's the notes you don't say that really weigh you down.
And then for the since you know everyone, I texted Matt and Zig this morning saying I'm going to try to make this so this podcast doesn't kill us. So we're using a whole grain pasta, which might also be a mistake, but I think it might be a flavor mistake, but it's not going to be a heart mistake.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for.
And some
Sodium.
Oh yeah, turkey spam.
There you go.
Oh boy. Oh boy. I just, with every detail, I get less excited.
I have faith that it's gonna go so hard, Andrew.
It
I believe in you.
Pretty good in my car. I feel like
I hope you think so, because it seemed like half of it ended up in your car.
Let's not. Let's not worry about all that.
Andrew blew into my house like a hurricane of chaos, and immediately was like, shove the mac and cheese in my oven that I had preheated for him, and then screamed, "I need a ton of paper towel," and then ran outside again.
Yeah.
And also I had when he was putting the mac and cheese into my oven,
yeah,
I could
get a glimpse of,
I saw him having to slosh it back into place because it clearly spilled out.
No actual mac though. It's just a little of the liquid, which is probably on the balance good. Okay. So we're going to do a live reveal. I mean, there will be edits here, so this might not. Yeah, well, we don't need to give a time code for how much time there is left in the mac and cheese. So what we're going to break format a little bit and just go right into our fourth movie, our first non-Rush Hour movie.
Yes, because when we pitched this series, we thought there were erroneously four.
I think, yeah,
Rush
we
Hour
simply
movies.
Were not aware that there were only three Rush Hour
and then
movies.
And then I realized that's because there were four Lethal Weapon movies.
Oh,
and I'm mistaken.
Well, and also they did announce a fourth Rush Hour movie, but apparently it just never got made.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, if you're loving this, tell the higher ups at Earwolves, because maybe we'll try to find a script for
tell
Rush
them
Hour
to
4.
Get Rush Hour 4 into production.
And do a live for, yeah, or we could just do the ill-fated television show episode at a time. We're not doing any of that. Okay. We figured that the next most prominent movie in the wave of late 90s into mid 2000s, isn't it crazy that a black person and an Asian person can be the leads of a movie,
mm-hmm.
canon, are Romeo Must Die.
Yes.
Is that
Concur.
Accurate? Now, Jessica, we also had an off-mic conversation because Romeo Must Die for a certain stripe of, we'll call them the worst Asian men alive, fixate on Romeo Must Die more than anything.
Yes, because famously, spoiler alert, yes. Jet Li and Aaliyah do not kiss in the movie, even though they are love interests.
Sort of.
Yes, and it's just pretty wild for love interests in any studio movie to not kiss at all.
I heard they had to do reshoots because they did kiss in the first test screenings and audiences were like, I don't like this.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Because yeah.
of Is that true?
Certainly according to MR Asians.
Oh.
You guys keep talking. I'm going to look this up before I slander the producers of this movie.
I mean, it is striking, but the only thought that I had was that Aaliyah is like a child in this movie. Not that I guess it ever stops them in this movie, but like,
yeah, how she is, old were they?
She when she died, she was 22. So she had to be, I guess, 22 or 21.
Wait, she was only 22?
I think so. I believe so.
I thought she was like 25 or something. Well, then, okay, Zig, you keep talking.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I look up something separate from
both
what
the
Andrew.
Host, the other co-host and the guest are currently on the phone, so I'm just going to vamp.
Romeo Must Die.
Look, I believe she was 22 when she died, which is still kind of crazy because she's such a great body of
wild.
Work.
Okay. All right, this is not conclusive. I'm realizing I just repeated a thing that I'm realizing all the posts I could find about it are from angry incel Asian guys.
Paul's coming from inside the house.
So,
isn't Andrew?
Well, it isn't because whether or not there were reshoots, the movie very pointedly has them not kiss. And
it's crazy that
it's cray cray.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn, you're right. She was 22 and she died the year after the movie came out. So the movie came out when she was 21.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. Now I got to look up Jet Li and how old he was. And no one's going to be happy about the answer.
If you told me like 45 when he made this movie, I'd believe it.
There's no good answer.
Oh no.
How old is he?
He's 16 years older than her.
Oh yeah. See, a little.
That's obviously not cool, but way less bad than I thought.
What did you think?
I thought he was like at least in his 40s. I thought he was at least 20 years older.
Oh, well, you know what? Maybe the MR Asians are right about you, Andrew.
Wait, that I'm a.
Because he looked in his prime to me, a proud, strong Asian woman.
Oh my God! All right, so the we'll just run down in case anyone hasn't seen Romeo Must Die, which I feel like as a, the listeners, I don't know. This one was definitely less popular.
Yeah, I think I literally only seen it once before when it first came out.
Yeah,
but I feel like everyone knew at least clips from it because I feel like you would see fight scenes from this online.
Yeah,
the fights were
better than I thought they would be.
Yeah, they're fun.
A lot of wire work,
like wire work in ways that don't make any sense.
Yeah, a lot of cartoonish wire work where they kick and then they'll like flip back around and kick again. Which
So Jet Li, this is a movie that is fairly grounded, except for Jet Li appears to be like some kind of like magician of some kind.
It's grounded except for when it does turn into a video game where they do like the X-ray.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And also, I do love that was like a thing, but they only did it like three times.
Yeah. I was so convinced that this is like a throwaway thing that they're going to do once, and then they brought it back.
What a bizarre
two separate times.
Okay. Oh no, the way they did it, I was like, this is like his RoboCop vision, and we're going to see this every single time he comes up against somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Equalizer, you know, where you see his vision, and then they were like, no, we'll do it twice up top, and then when we remember that we started this, we'll do it once at the end.
Yeah,
Jessica gestured at me when she said the Equalizer, and I could only assume she meant, you know, like old man vision like you.
No, it's because the last time we recorded a podcast together, you said I was the Equalizer.
Oh, I forgot about that. And we're sitting in the same seats too.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Okay.
This is how old Andrew is that he doesn't even remember.
All right.
Live and learn. Life's a lesson. Life is a lesson. And I'm the teacher. First I'm gonna crawl, then I'm gonna walk, then I'm gonna stand, then I'm gonna talk. But I gotta learn in order to teach. Then I gotta burn in order to reach my nigga. I see what I see day by day.
So we open on a DMX song, already much better music than any of the Rush Hour movies. I'm just going to call this Rush Hour 4.
Yeah.
This movie's Rush Hour 4.
This is going to get real confusing when you have to go back and do Rush Hour 4 when it finally comes out.
We should be so lucky. Okay. We open on some Asian people at the club. We get a insane gratuitous boob, just to remind you this movie's rated R.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Nipple within the first 60 seconds of this movie.
As it was happening, I was like, I don't think they're just going to start out with the boob, and they go right to it.
Yeah, and then there's no other nudity for the rest of the movie.
Nothing.
Yeah.
That has to be like for some producers, like, we need to have some sex in here.
But it's not even like, I think the movie would not, I just assumed it was rated R. It's got to be rated R,
also,
right?
It was very weird because like the way it opens, it's like you see this entire club of black people, black club goers who are all like have stopped dancing and are staring at what's happening. And then when they show you what's happening, you're like, well, there's like a kind of gross Asian guy with like his girlfriend who are like making out. And you're like, I guess it's gross to them that Asian people are making out, you know? And then you see the two girls and then there's full boob and you're like, oh Lord.
I mean, it's like pretty reasonable that the club is staring at this woman who just briefly pulled another woman's one boob out.
But to be fair, they did try to make it seem like this is like a hot happening young person's club. Yeah. And I can't imagine like two women making out and one showing a boob is going to like stop the entire club in its tracks.
Yeah, I was a little put off that they were clutching their pearls over what I'd assumed most people would want to see, which is like hot ladies in a club dancing, especially in that demographic.
Yeah.
Also, this is just a note for myself as a former bouncer. The bouncer that they have in this is so, to me, comically short. Like, he comes in so hot, and he's also so much shorter than the guy that's actually bouncing out of the bar. I'm like, they couldn't find one. Also, he has, like, a lisp. Like, he couldn't find one.
Oh, yeah, the lisp was so crazy. What were they trying to do?
It was
food update. Mac and cheese needs a little more time. Sorry. Okay. I've been listening. bouncer
so,
talk.
All of it was so wildly confusing. Okay, well, first of all, I would like to just take a moment to describe my viewing of this movie. Because, unfortunately, my apologies to the Asian community. I did not watch this movie when it first came out in theaters.
Wow.
I know. I'm part of the problem.
Think you know someone.
Look, the movie did just fine. I just looked up its box office. The movie had a budget of $25 million and it made $91 million.
Yeah.
Solidly in the black. Pun intended.
Jessica.
In the African-American, please, Jessica.
Solidly in the African-American. So this weekend, I was on a fun girls weekend away with a group of women that I hang out with, and we call ourselves the Soft Girls. You don't need to know about that.
You guys don't need to know about your social group.
But it is a group that is majority black women, okay? And everybody is very funny. A lot of professional comedy people in the group, okay? So we hung out in the desert, and we were like, what should we, let's watch, after drinking and imbibing various things, we were like, let's watch a movie. So I said, well, I have to watch Romeo Must Die. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So everybody agreed. And we started the movie at 11 PM thinking no one's going to stay up for like thinking we're going to watch half of it and I'll have to finish the rest by myself. We stayed for the entire movie. Every single person stayed up and watched it. Mm-hmm. And it was very fun watching it with a group, but there's a lot of discussion that I will now pepper into the conversation.
This is great. This is great that you got a little writer's room together.
Yeah, totally, to do your podcast. Yeah. But with the first 3 minutes of this movie were so wildly confusing to every single person.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, nobody knew what was going on, why everybody was upset, why they chose to have a bouncer with such a pronounced list.
Yeah.
But also, everything the bouncer was saying made zero sense.
His dialogue is crazy. It's such a little walk for Amazing Grace so they get lost. Like, that's
He comes
up and threatens the four Asian people. And he uses a slur. I was like, I know this is a slur I've heard before, but I had like, was like, I think they didn't make this up for this movie.
I do have a note that says never heard that slur.
Yeah, which is
okay. So same thing happened with my group of girls.
Yeah,
like none of them because I was the only East Asian.
I'll say the Z word.
Yeah,
it was Zipperhead.
Yes, and so none of them had heard it because they were like, "Is that a slur?" And I'd heard it before.
I'd heard it, but I couldn't remember anything about it.
But I knew that it was. I knew it came from the Vietnam War, and I thought that it had originated from something with like body bags, how you like zip it up, blah blah blah, because they killed so many Vietnamese or something.
Sure,
but then later, literally 10 minutes ago before we started recording, I was like, oh, I should look up if I was right or not. But there's just so many different interpretations of the origins. Like some were saying it's from like the American soldiers' practice of decapitating Vietnamese people and then using zippers from their uniform to like hold up the heads or something that. And like,
my thought was, I mean, I didn't look any information into it. I just assumed, like, I thought maybe somebody has like a middle part and it looked like a zipper. Like I was trying.
Those Vietnamese in their middle parts.
That's true.
So much more wholesome than like, it's from shooting someone in the head and it looks like a zipper.
I did think maybe it was from the braids, the cues that the Chinese men were forced to have.
But this is from the Vietnam War.
I know. Prior to knowing that, that's what I thought. Maybe.
It's kind of an old timey.
I mean, clearly slur. They had meetings about like what kind of slur.
Yeah.
Because this is what I think. It may shock everyone in this room and all of your listeners that this movie was made exclusively by white men. Okay. Directed by a white man, written by two white men. Big shock. I'll give you a second to process that.
I would bet money the first draft said chink, and then there was a negotiation on where
based
they
on the age of the men. I bet it said gook.
Oh sure, sure, yeah. Sure, sure. But something like that everyone knows.
And they're like, "What's gook light?"
Yeah, Z head. I'll say it. Zipper head. Okay, so they get threatened by the bouncer, and then a bunch of triads come in. Including
Russell Wong, who was the thirst trap heartthrob from Joy Luck Club. All the girls were very taken by him.
Is he the guy that looked like he was in The Matrix?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. He's a very handsome man.
Yeah.
I was going to say, get the common thread between the movie, the Rush Hour series and Romeo Must Die, which is both 90s suits.
Crazy fits. Yes.
Crazy fits. Yeah. Just like the craziest fit. But also like the villains being so telegraphed ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because every villain just shops at the same store that Morpheus shops at. Little teeny tiny round glasses, long ass like leather trench coat. And they're like, hi, I'm the good guy.
I will say my favorite telegraphed bad guy was the evil white guy, the evil business white man.
Who
even talked like he's in a sketch a sketch show.
There was there's a bunch of kung fu, a little bit of wire work. The guy he blocks a bottle with his forearm. I wrote that down.
We got to move at a quicker pace because we have not even gotten past the cold open yet.
Okay. Guns get drawn. DMX calms things down with a machine gun, as just happens in real life. Apparently, DMX keeps a segregated bar. We learned there's a gang war. Because there's a bit, sorry, Jessica looked at me with alarm. There's a bit where he was like, if anyone isn't black, you got to leave.
Yeah, he did say that. I was like, this doesn't sound like a black guy wrote this. I don't think they care.
That didn't happen in the late 90s at every club.
We do learn why everyone's so mystified that there are Asian people in the bar, sort of, because there's mention of a gang war, but then it's not really a gang war.
Yeah, but also it takes place in Oakland, right?
Yes.
Like, there are Asian people
at the black club.
Yeah. And also, like, the main, like, black leader and the main Asian leader do business together. Like, because the next scene is we see them, like, confirming their continuing, not even a new, like, their continuing business, like, relationships.
Also, continuing a through line between Rush Hour 3 and this, Mr. Singh was Master Yu in Rush Hour 3.
There's not that many roles for Asian people in that.
I was like, oh, he did it. Racist who's on the first bit. And
do we at this point? We basically there's a little. Oh, the and then you know, cut to the triad kid from the bar getting hung from like he's not a triad. He's like whatever the San Francisco organized crime triad ish Chinese gang people. He's dead. And then, you know, there's a the whole gangland. We see them learning about this. And then we go to a Hong Kong prison where, once again, white director jumps out and the amount of
rice that they get is crazy, right?
Well, there's a rice fight.
Yeah. But they gave him so much rice. I was like, man, I kind of want that.
All the girls were like, that fried rice looks really good. I would not mind going to prison, Hong Kong prison.
The Hong Kong prison food looked amazing.
Yeah. It looks so fresh too.
Yeah, it looked really good.
Yeah. And also a mix of Mandarin and Cantonese.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the amount of Mandarin, I guess Jet Li just doesn't speak Cantonese.
That's surprising to me.
It's surprising to me, too. But why wouldn't he speak Cantonese?
Like, yeah, that's true.
It's just like it's so bizarre. Yeah, they do an even crazier job than Rush Hour as far as just speaking Chinese at each other.
So it was like Chinese this person speaking Mandarin, this person speaking
Cantonese. Wait, doesn't he speak Cantonese when he's leaving the jail with the other guard? Doesn't he speak Cantonese?
No, he's speaking Mandarin. Okay. That scene is crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's like in real life, that guard is like, you don't work here.
Because this movie came out 3 years after the handover of Hong Kong. So Hong Kong was under British rule for 101 years. And in 1997, the whatever that weird fucked up agreement was ended and they had to hand Hong Kong back to China, which means that for 101 years, people in Hong Kong didn't have to learn Mandarin because that was like mainland shit.
Yeah.
They spoke British English and Cantonese. Yeah. And so there's no way 3 years later, some dude who like is from Hong Kong would only speak Mandarin.
Yeah. Well, and works as a prison guard. Also, there was a lot of this probably happens in Hong Kong a little more than the rest of China. There's a lot of mixed people working at that prison. They're just like, I just think there's probably not as much whiteness in the prison system in actual Hong Kong.
Oh, you mean as prisoners or as
in
guards?
Both, like just everyone.
Yeah.
It was just very clear.
There were a lot of British people running around for 100 years.
That's true. But I'm just saying.
Well, you got me in this prison, didn't it?
The casting very clearly was Asian enough, especially for the background.
Speaking of the casting from the black perspective, this may have just jumped out to the black viewers like myself, but they cast so many bald black guys in this movie that it became, there were scenes where I'm like, which bald black guy is this?
Wait, who's, okay.
It was noticeable, like, there's a lot of shiny heads in these scenes.
Well, how do you telegraph that someone is really tough if they don't have a shiny bald head?
Shiny bald head and like the largest gold earrings you've ever seen.
Yes, there was a lot of big earrings.
Yeah, a lot of oversized tracksuits. I'm surprised I didn't see any Kango.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although Delroy Lindo's suit is so funny.
You know, I was like, I could see Jessica wearing this suit unironically.
How dare you? His Steve Harvey suit?
Yes.
There's a okay. But before his suit. Escape, Jet Li learns about the death of whoever the triad person was. We later find out it's his brother. Doesn't really matter. And he hatches a plan which involves getting taken to solitary, which apparently in this prison, they hang you up by your foot, and then the largest the guard in the prison just beats you up.
Yeah.
And so there's like a little pretty well done fight sequence where he's chain fighting them basically as he's hanging upside down. Mm-hmm.
But then,
and that's where we first see a Mortal Kombat vision.
Yeah.
Yes. And then he, the keys to his leg shackles are dropped on the floor, and he uses his hand shackles, the chain, to sweep up the keys, and they go flying. He catches it in his mouth.
Yeah. It cannot be stressed enough that Jet Li has the force in this movie.
Okay, like, but he actually had to catch the keys in his mouth.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. You're saying
that was not a CG key jump into the mouth.
Right.
That was
done
on the day, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did it.
The CG in this movie is very evident.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it's not great, but it's like 2000. So
yeah. It's of its time. Yeah.
Okay. Jet Li escapes. There's a little Cantonese to Mandarin guard on guard action is what I wrote down. Just so bizarre. And then after Jet Li escapes, the other thing I was thinking about is this movie is one of the most pre-9/11 like movies I've seen in a while.
Also,
so the next scene takes place at the airport past security, but no one has bought a ticket because they use the metal detectors for the two crime families to have like a meeting.
Yeah. And also they went through the security just to have their meeting there.
Yes.
Like they could just
breeze.
They didn't have
through.
To explain themselves at all. Yeah.
It seemed like one of them still had a gun also. Maybe that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
It was very, but then there's another later 9/11 or pre in like 90s moment. It doesn't have anything to do with 9/11, I guess. The families are in business together. We meet Aaliyah, who is the crime daughter who's working at some store. There's a very contrived little dance number.
Yeah, you couldn't see it coming all the way. But I will say, I didn't remember Aaliyah being such a good actress. Like, because I haven't seen the movie.
This was her debut, too. This was her acting debut. She was great.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can just jump to one opinion. She was acting circles around Jet Li.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Andrew.
Yes?
I don't like that.
Really?
Because you know what? Jet Li, when he did his scenes in Mandarin, fantastic acting.
That's true. He does not like speaking English.
Yes, it's very clear. But the scenes where he had to act in Mandarin, great acting.
Their chemistry was...
And just because you grew up in Michigan...
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to check. You guys vamp or move the plot along. I got to check on
I'm just going to do the point where I start jumping ahead to stuff. To like, I have maybe, and I use the word loosely, two favorite racist scenes in this movie. Because they're so cartoonishly racist that it seems like it would be out of like South Park or something. But like his first like real fight scene with like Anthony Anderson and his like crew of guys, he like there's that one point where he takes the sagging pants of a black guy and takes his belt off, and he takes his pants off and then wraps his belt around the leg.
And the guy is wearing a comically shiny thong Speedo.
Yes. That was tied with, we'll get to it later, but the Jet Li hosing down black people in the warehouse.
Well, see, that's how you know it was directed and written by exclusively white men.
Oh, 1,000%.
Okay, should we move back to the little dance number?
Oh, wait. I do want to say the soft girls, a lot of...
Oh, yes, the report from the...
A lot of compliments on Aaliyah's makeup. Everyone thought it was really beautifully done, especially since in that era, it was like a very bad makeup era where you would have like... You would expect like pencil thin eyebrows,
right.
Like frosted makeup, both like... frosted pastel-y eye makeup and lip color. And like, she looked so great. Everything, like, you could do her makeup exactly the same way today and it yeah. would look right.
I was wondering if she brought her own team.
That was the speculation. Yeah. That was the speculation that she right. she did. And she so everybody thought she looked fantastic. And also the girls were all very taken by Jet Li.
Really?
Yes.
I watched the movie.
They thought he was very cute and charming.
Damn. Yeah, he's very handsome in this movie. I think I said it before we started recording, but there's a moment where he like goes to the club to be cool and black and he like just has a hat on backwards. I was like, oh, I get it. I see.
I literally, it says we're jumping ahead. At that scene, I wrote out he looks like a little boy.
Andrew, continuing.
MR Asians of America, you know who your enemy is now.
For the soft girls, how many people were watching it for the first time?
I believe every single one.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah.
I was shocked. I feel like people have not seen. I think truly this movie so over indexes in my like consciousness because like every like bitter, horrible, like Gen X millennial Asian man is like, don't you remember? They don't even kiss at the end.
Like, I did announce it to the soft girls and everybody was shocked. And then we waited till the end we thought they were really cute together. So it was to the point where like I was like, oh, did I misremember that? You know? and then we were like, oh, they're not going to kiss. Yeah, they just tenderly hug.
They do a hug.
But the reason
it feels like a reshoot, though, is she touches his face in a way right before. Like, I think if there was the reshoot version of this is they just shot the hug. Everything else was the same.
OK, if we could jump ahead and spoil the ending real quick. The soft girls and I did agree. It would be so wild for the first time they kiss to be literally seconds after he watches his dad shoot himself in the head. He just watches that commit suicide. Yeah. That is not the time for them to kiss for the first time.
Yeah, I did think that too. It's like he did just watch his dad.
He would be like, yeah, but you got it. It's Aaliyah, guys. okay, we meet Anthony Anderson, who is not like in a different movie entirely, but he's
in Rush Hour 4.
He's supposed to, he's like more Rush Hour 4-y in that he's like the comic relief. It's like fat joke central with him.
Mm, a lot of racism jokes from him too.
Yeah, he gets most of like the wackiness, but then wackiness, i.e. the bigotry. Yeah. But also it's like his intent swings like wildly through the movie from like kind of goofball to like trying to murder people with his hands. Mm-hmm. Like, and it goes back and forth.
That's just classic male hero.
Yeah, he's just very unstable. He's like very, very, very fucked up.
Oh, everybody hated Anthony Anderson.
Yeah.
Like the across the board, all the soft girls hated him to the point where every single time he came on screen, like multiple soft girls would just yell, I hope he dies in this scene. I want him to die. I hate this man. He needs to go away. Everybody hated him.
I will point out the way you're talking. It feels like this is a backdoor pilot for the Soft Girls podcast. Yeah. So if you're liking this vibe,
check out Soft Launch this spring.
This is the soft launch of the Soft Girls.
Okay, Jet Li arrives in Oakland. He buys a bunch, like he goes to the hardware store and buys like the classic I'm gonna kidnap someone pack, like a bunch of zip ties, a drill,
does
and like some rope, kinda. Because he then used there's a bunch of back. The pacing of this is much, I think, better than Rush Hour, as in like it bounces back and forth between the two stories without long ass pointless scenes.
Yes, but the plot is indiscernible.
Yeah, it's very.
It was so hard for everyone to follow what was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a vibe, like the mechanics of the plot incomprehensible, but because of like the I guess mostly the acting like and the just like the styling, it's just so clear who's the bad guy in every scene.
I mean, I think you could have chopped 20-30 off of this and it would have made a little bit
more. Or if you just they did just overcomplicated things.
Yeah,
you know, everything was overcomplicated.
There's too many wrinkles.
Yeah, like because after we finished watching it. Like I looked up the Wikipedia summary for it and there was so much backstory that I never knew.
Basically what happens is there's going to be a NFL team in Oakland/ San Francisco maybe. And they are the crime gangs are trying to buy up or acquire all the real estate that the stadium will be built on for this white guy who just is like, might as well be called like evil McWhite guy.
Yeah. Like so basically they want a waterfront stadium, and the waterfront is controlled 50% by the Chinese gang, 50% by the black gang.
Yeah.
And they're
classic.
Yes. Yeah. And they're basically going, they're trying to get all the deeds to all of these properties to sell to the evil white guy.
Yeah.
And okay, so a detail that I didn't realize until I read the Wikipedia was that Jet Li is a ex-cop.
Yes,
really?
In Hong Kong. Never mentioned.
There's a teeny tiny. So there's a moment where Jet Li, in the first use of his clear kidnapping tools, drills out the lock to the apartment that his we'll find out his dead brother, the kid that got the triad that got killed in the opening scene. Drills out the lock, even though presumably he would be like allowed to go in there.
Yeah.
And there's like a real like exposition montage where like you see a picture of the two of them as adults enough, and then you see a picture of Jet Li in a cop uniform, and then you have a flashback to the two of them floating on this basketball that he finds.
I had put the playback at 1.25 by that point.
Oh, so my God. Yeah.
How dare you?
I was just blazing.
And did you do that during any of the rush hours?
I did not, but I.
Interesting.
I watched rush hour at 1.75x. Because I was just like, I got it. I know. I get it. I understand.
Yeah. Well, as the clock would tick, I was like, I didn't realize this movie was 2 hours long. So
basically, though, there's a lot of back and forth and like table setting for this scheme. It goes back and forth. But basically, Delroy Lindo and who plays the triad boss?
He was Master Yu in the.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You know, all the triad leaders are going, or the gang leaders are talking to the evil white guy, and okay, so that all that table setting is done, and then we
haven't even brought up Aaliyah's brother in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing that all the black members of the Soft Girls wanted to bring up were these two black siblings who are named Trish and Colin O'Day.
It was so weird.
We were like, was this originally written to be like the Irish mob or something? And then they just didn't change the names.
Feels like it has.
Cody Ziegler, have you ever met black siblings named Trish and Colin?
I've not met. I know they exist.
I know
that there's a black Colin out there and a black Trish that exist together as a couple siblings. But like Trish, Trisha's short to Trish. I will say the Colin, his performance felt like
I wrote down Colin. Every time he opens his mouth, he has some real this motherfucker is gonna die energy.
Well, that but he felt like you know when you watch like SVU and you see like this Juilliard trained actor pretend to be like from the inner city, like that's the energy I got, particularly when he was interacting with his father. It's like I don't know if this guy is like the right person to be cast in this movie.
One of the scenes that made one of the girls lose her mind was the scene where it just opens on Colin in his like apartment. And it's just the back of his head and he coughs for no reason. And they use that take because he's smoking weed. And it's like, why did you use the take where he coughed?
So
there was no
weird.
Reason. And then it cuts to his girlfriend who is prepared, like rolling a joint. And it looks like she's using CMOS. Like the prop master has never seen marijuana before in his entire life.
It
was straight up, she was picking apart CMOS.
It was awesome. the all his scenes are just like so melodramatic like just like clear tread. It's like he's like talking like they're really trying to drum up like emotion for when he dies.
Yeah, it is a lot of like, all right, I see where this was based off Romeo and Juliet, but we could have trimmed.
Yeah,
we could have cut out a couple of these characters.
Oh, and somewhere in all this mess, Aaliyah meets Jet Li because he steals a cab, and she jumps in a cab because she's trying to escape Anthony Anderson. Oh, which is the second '90s moment because she escapes Anthony Anderson because he is listening to a DMX CD. At a record store on the like wall CD player
while harassing another woman.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I was like, oh, a person watching this today, a kid, would not understand what this is fucking this is from thing a, about what's
this
happening.
This is like an
here.
Alien world. Yeah, I as I was watching that, I was like, oh, well, we used to do that. I forgot.
Yeah.
We used
to do that. So it's just like a six, usually at the record store, like a 6 or 8 disc CD changer on the wall with like the
most popular movie,
and you could just stand at the wall and listen to it on a corded headphone.
Yeah, use a headphone that a million people have used and not wiped in between.
Yeah.
And you just stood there and, you know, and vibed. And they really went out of their way to make Anthony Anderson, and you know, he also went out of his way to make his character so unlikable, because like literally every time you see him, he's saying something like stupid or sexist or racist.
Yeah.
He's like harassing women, or he's got a string of pizza cheese hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah, he is. He is a cartoon character.
Yeah. He's like kind of like a bigoted Yogi Bear sort of vibe going on. Like, it's weird.
If you told me there was a beat where he slipped on a banana peel, like I would have.
Yeah. Really
He also told her the pizza was like vegan or vegetarian, and it was a pepperoni pizza.
He's, you know, Anthony Anderson.
Yeah, when he starts riffing, you leave it in.
Let's see. Okay, so there's all this cabbie stuff. Isaiah Washington plays the like black version of the clearly evil gang side.
Yeah, he's the black version of Russell Wong.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tiny glasses.
Yeah,
same Orange trench coat.
Yeah. It's very funny how they were like, let's parallel both of these. Like, they each had a sibling who was killed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because of the drug war. They each had like a dad who basically acted the exact same way, culturally respective, you know. Yeah. And then they each had a number two who was like the evil guy that like
so obviously evil.
Can we talk about can we talk about my favorite scene with him,
please?
It's the crab interrogation
scene.
Oh
my god, I wrote
crab. Right.
Okay, yeah. Let's see. Is there any thing? Yeah, there's just a bunch of back and forth. This is the complicated part, was too much shit. Okay, so basically when it starts becoming clear that the evil like enforcers are taking over, yes, please, there's a scene.
Yeah, there's a scene like I again, the movie's on 1.25 speed, so I'm like, who is this random guy? Do I know who this crab boat person is? Like, did he have backstory? But no,
nope.
He holds him up to get the deed, whatever, but like he does a bit where he pulls out a gun and he dunks his head into a live crab, not even a tank, a holding bin.
Yeah.
And like, it's supposed to be very threatening, but the crabs aren't really like agitated that much.
Funny things about crabs in the barrel, they can't climb out and they don't want to stay in. I guess they're strange like that, huh?
Yeah.
Some brothers strange like that too, you know what I mean? As soon as one of us move up, a crab motherfucker like yourself pulls us right back down. Yeah. But let me tell you something now. I know this place must seem like a piece of shit to a guy like you, but that's still my piece of shit. And I ain't selling it. I got work to do. But let's look at it another way. You got two choices. You either sign us over the deed, or I can blow your motherfucking head off and leave you right here with the rest of these crabs. Now, which is it?
Yo, okay! I hear you! All right! I'll do it!
What?
I said I'd do it, man. It's for your role.
Yeah, and he keeps having to like try to agitate the crabs with a gun, and it's like, why don't you just put the gun to his head? That's scarier than I'd rather get pinched by a crab than shot in the head.
Yeah, ouchie, you know.
Question for you two, part of the crab gang.
Sure.
How did those crabs look to you? Like,
were alive crabs. Yeah,
they were clearly alive crabs. They were Dungeness.
So,
would you throw them in a pot? Or what I'm saying is like,
I'd steam them.
Yeah, you gotta steam them, but I don't know if there's that much. This is my crab fact check. Is I don't think like there is Dungeness up in San Francisco, but it's mostly like a Seattle.
But this was clearly shot in Vancouver.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a Pacific Northwest kind of deal. We're jumping around a little bit. Why is everyone evil dressed like they're in the Matrix? They say the blacks a decent amount in this movie.
Yeah. Which, just like we all do, right, guys?
What?
Jessica, no.
It is, I mean, it's racist, but less.
I mean, clearly not what was said.
Also, pretty accurate on the Asians parts.
I know. That's like exactly how my parents fucking talk. And then the football scene happens.
Oh yeah.
One of the crazier scenes, like Oh no! There's a previous scene where the zip ties come out, where Jet Li fights Anthony Anderson and some goons.
Oh yeah, we covered the alley. He takes out the guy's sagging pants.
Oh yes, yeah, yes, yes. Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay, I was too busy looking at the mac and cheese. Anyway, so Jet Li visits Aaliyah in the park, where all of her like father's gang enforcers are playing tackle football in like a children's park.
Yeah. It also, by the way, like it took all of us girls so long before we realized they weren't playing basketball.
What? That's an on you thing. Yeah. That feels like you had too much desert imbibables.
It was also very fun watching the children extras like pretend to eat the ice cream that was clearly mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a scene, and this is another one of those tonal moments, because it's like these people tried to kill each other, like, you know, a scene earlier.
Yeah.
And now they're playing football, which Aaliyah encourages Jet Li to do.
Yeah.
But because she thinks it's funny. I mean, ultimately, the scene serves like he impresses her for the first time.
Well, and then you get some action too, like the
wire work.
But it's just very weird.
Yeah,
it's just like a very like.
Well, and also like we were all like, Anthony Anderson, like this man destroyed you and all of your boys the last time you saw him, and now you're just like, okay, let's play football, and we'll show you now that there are football rules.
Yeah, it's basically they punch him, I guess, sort of, or tuck or tackle him a couple times.
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to violently
beat the shit out of these
men who are nominally playing football in front of like a dozen children.
Yeah.
It's such a weird scene.
It's very weird. But you know what? I do believe it is what several white men consider a realistic,
funny
character building scene.
Yeah.
I just wrote, this scene is insane. Aaliyah is loving it. Oh, okay. Pause for trick or treaters. And then after the football scene, as the football scene is wrapping up, Jet Li calls one of the kids brother, and
is that one of your favorite racist scenes?
No, I missed that because it was on 1.25. I gotta admit,
when he says it, it's not quite as bad as in Rush Hour 3 when Jackie Chan says Snoopy Dog, it's on that same like we pass the weed scene. Jet Li goes back to his brother's apartment, finds some shit in his brother's car, and this is where we start to get to the mystery of it. He finds a list of addresses, which, you know, are the addresses.
This movie was so long.
It's so tedious.
So many things happen.
Let's see. Yeah, after Aaliyah's brother Colin gets killed, they bond over having dead siblings, Jet Li and Aaliyah.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of on. They're like, now they're going to like track down the mystery.
Yeah, 90 minutes in, let's get this thing
going. Yeah, it's so fucking like, they go to the first address and they find a bunch of dead Chinese people motorcyclists with like Uzis on them. Mm-hmm. There's a car chase, and it turns out one of the motorcycle assassins is they say Chinese woman.
She's clearly not, but an Asian woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a beat which was sort of plays into what we talked about with
Jackie Chan. Yeah.
Our guess in the Rush Hour movies was that Jackie Chan was like maybe contractually not wouldn't have to like ever hit a woman,
because
they go to tortured lengths to have him never punch Zhang Ziyi. It's ridiculous. Like, it doesn't actually make sense. They have to like move everyone to different
place. That wasn't Zhang Ziyi.
In three.
For sure, too.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, two. I was thinking of Romeo Must Die. I was like, what are you talking about? We just said she's not Chinese.
Yeah. No. I'm saying it's just like one of those things where. In Romeo Must Die, when faced with a assassin who is a woman, he explicitly says, "I will not hit a woman," and then instead uses Aaliyah as sort of like a swing dance baseball bat.
Yeah.
It was a cool scene. I got to admit, that was fun.
Weird. Yeah, it's like kind of like a dance fight.
I mean I saw conceptually, I think, what they were trying to do. Was it executed? Who's to really say? But I will say this is also like 90 minutes in the movie where they bring back the x-ray vision thing. So I was like, wow, they really waited to come back around on the use of that that device.
And they murder, yeah, they murder this woman, and Aaliyah's like remarkably chill about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she does, like, I mean, she is the daughter of like a gang lord.
Yeah.
But her whole thing is she seems like she's trying to like not be in. Yes, sure.
But I
you
mean,
think Trish have got bodies?
Sure.
But she's like desensitized to it.
Okay, fine. Asian,
Trish O'Day.
Yeah.
We see the triads killing some rival triads. And this is where the masks are off, basically. The plan is clearly like everyone is double and sometimes triple crossing each other. They're playing some PS1 at the safe house with Aaliyah and Delroy Lindo. Let's see. Okay, they get the white guy. They go to DMX's casino, which is the final piece in the nefarious scheme. They need,
which is also which is the club, from, club the from the beginning. Yeah,
and also though it's been several days later, I would bet money if you paused it. I just kind of had a sense. I recognized a few. It seems
they
like
shot on the same day because I recognized an extra that like he looks like Boots Riley.
There's every chance it simply was Boots Riley. Yeah, you know, DMX just has a club where it just so happens that you know, a week later, every single person is the wearing identical the human being wearing the same clothes. Yeah. But they go in, they murder DMX and steal his club. Also, the nice thing about this movie is it kind of like lets real estate operate on a finder's keeper level as far as like the deed goes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It is weird.
Like you could quite simply snatch a deed out of someone's hand and now you own the place.
They're treated like bearer bonds. Yeah.
Like it's like, this is not.
Was there a moment where like he's in a helicopter and like the deeds fall out of his hand?
Yeah, they do act like it's bearer bonds where like you can't get it back. It's not in public record. Yeah, like if this piece of paper is gone, it's gone.
Yeah. So there's that basically. Yeah. So there's a bunch of shootouts. Everyone betrays each other. The white guy. Oh, the one thing that I remembering from when I first saw it is when they finally get a shootout in front of the white guy. The white guy's bodyguard has
an
M16
built into his briefcase. That was pretty great.
Which is unbelievable.
When I say I keep that thing on me, that's what I mean.
It made me scream. I was like, that is fucking amazing. The main white guy takes the deeds. And yeah, so there's a so basically it works out because I think they were trying to really not have people of other races kill each other. Aaliyah shoots Isaiah Washington, and then Jet Li goes to go fight.
I completely forgot about Russell's character, so I was like, "Oh, the movie's over," and like, "Oh wait,
yeah,
Bruce Lee or Jet Li has to fight now."
Yeah. So then we go to a full on Mortal Kombat scene, shot like Mortal Kombat.
The stage is on fire.
Everything's on fucking fire. And they have a fight that is. Not my favorite fight, I think.
Yeah, it felt like they lost steam by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it was tacked on, like, we got to have one final
Maybe fight. They also forgot about Russell Long, and they were like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, it really just, like, keeps on, like, and then there's the fucking dad. It's just,
and
like.
And then he goes and confronts, he has to go confront his dad, and of course, like, classic what Hollywood always puts on Asian characters, which is.
Honor.
Because of honor, the dad elects to kill himself. And Jet Li clearly knows that, because he's like. Because he doesn't kill his dad and he gives him the gun and is like,
yeah,
I'm going to basically let you decide how you want to do this. Knowing obviously it's going to be because of the honor. He's going to kill himself.
The Rush Hour franchise and Romeo Must Die is very heavy on technically our Chinese lead did not commit murder at the very end. Like technically all he did was like threaten his dad and basically like both the honor and the like everyone else is going to try to murder you and just slides a gun across the table.
It's the he basically like a gamer said kill yourself.
KYS.
And then he walks away and his dad he
it's
hears
so
the gunshot
intense.
Where his dad shoots himself in the head.
He smiles a little bit.
Doesn't flinch. He's just like, there it is, you know, and then walks out to meet Aaliyah, where I think everyone will agree would have been inappropriate for them to kiss for the first
time. Wow, you're really.
They should have kissed earlier.
They should have kissed. They should have been kissing.
They should have kissed at the club when they danced together.
Yeah, they should have been smooching.
Or they should have kissed ABS. When he sneaks into her room in the safe house.
But that's less sexy. When they were dancing in the club, that was very cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's when they should have been kissing like those two women in the opening scene.
Yeah.
That's she should have pulled up Jet Li's shirt.
That's a kiss and ass
showed
club.
showed his nipple.
Yeah.
Do you think the only other thing is the final use of the Mortal Kombat thing is by far the most insane one, because it's when Jet Li, they both do a wire work jump, but Jet Li jumps higher than Russell Wong and kicks him on the top of his head. And then we go into X-ray vision, mm-hmm. where his skull and all of the bones in his spinal column do a sort of billiard shot, one smashing into the other.
Yeah.
He apparently smashes his skull and his entire spine.
Yeah, yeah. Every vertebrae. Yeah.
It does go from the head to his ass bone. Which is...
It is very Mortal Kombat. Yeah.
It's one of the most kind of horrible things to think about that I guess could never really happen.
It was their equivalent of Sub-Zero who would then pull out your spine.
He'd freeze you and then rip you out.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it was. That was this world's version.
So this is the end of the movie, but were you an Aaliyah fan, musically?
Yes. We should talk about the song.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the best songs ever she did for this movie.
Yeah, my last note literally is this theme song slaps.
Yeah.
Okay. That was Romeo Must Die.
Yeah.
Romeo Must Die. It was honestly, of these movies, the three Rush Hour movies, I think it's the best.
What?
I this is something I've
been saying. Rush Hour 1 is better?
I'd say
it's certainly better than Rush Hour 2 and 3.
Rush Hour 1 structurally to me is this is a, I would dare say, very well written movie.
That's true.
Yeah, you understand the plot. You understand what's happening. You understand every character's dynamic. It's not a incomprehensible mess.
Yeah, yeah. I would say this movie is nigh incomprehensible.
Yes, that's true.
I will say the performances mostly are higher quality across the board.
Yeah, the acting is definitely better than any of the Rush Hour films.
I'd say fight scenes.
I like this kind of fight scene more than I'm realizing, having watched all these movies back to back.
You like this wirework stuff better than Jackie Chan's practical stunts?
Well, in Rush Hour, yes. They're a little lackluster in Rush Hour. Just out there. Yeah. Compared to his other body.
Once again, Asian men of the world, you know who your enemy is.
It's me. And apparently DMX from time to time. Okay, so we had to take a quick break to get a wee bit of kimchi spam mac and cheese served.
I hate to say it because I love being a hater, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
It's okay. So the texture is just straight fucked. Something went wrong texture wise.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? I wonder if maybe the recipe works. It's just that I didn't adapt it or consider the fact that kimchi is pretty acidic.
Yeah, because it basically made the cheese curdle.
Yeah.
But it didn't affect the flavor.
It tastes really good.
Yeah,
it tastes really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay, Jessica?
Yes?
We end the show by rating the movie and the food and trying to decide whether this brought Asian and Black people closer together or divided us like two houses divided of equal
I can't remember
stature.
Two houses of equal stature, torn apart and old, whatever.
I think culturally, for the time, I think this movie did bring Asian people and Black people closer together.
Yeah. Well, I think it was. I guess ultimately. Especially considering they had a sequel just based on the cast.
Yeah.
It wasn't a real sequel. So, yeah, I think it was DMX and Jet Li should be in something.
Yeah.
But in terms of this room of Asian people and Black people.
Well, that's the thing. The further wedge, though, it's less to do with, I think, Black folks specifically. But this movie truly drove
an Asian wedge between you and me.
Well, and Asian men in general to be fucking nuts. So I think for that reason, this was
divisive,
real divisive. Yeah.
But the food, I give.
Oh, no, we have a sister. Oh. We'll go through the movie.
Oh.
We'll rate the action.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What do we rate the action in terms of out of five? How many out of five crabs What would you rate the action in this movie?
Action?
Yeah.
Solid four out of five crabs.
4 out of 5 crabs,
yeah.
Yeah, I would do the same. I love wire work.
Yeah. I'm going to give it 4.5. Yeah, oh, wow. I thought this action was great.
Andrew desperately trying to win back Asian men.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Thirsty. It's not good on you, Andrew.
I guess for Rush Hour was rate the comedy.
Yeah, there's very little intentional comedy besides just
comedy
Anthony
is zero.
It's just the Anthony Anderson show.
Yeah, I will say
why don't we rate the chemistry?
Oh,
out of 5 zip ties from a hardware store, 5 Jet Li zip ties. How many do you give it?
I give it 3.75 zip ties.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty positive.
Yeah, because Aaliyah was so charming.
Yeah.
And Jet Li also, I think he was very cute. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I think it's kind of unfair because the language barrier definitely made it a little bit harder, but I think they worked well together. Like, especially that club dance scene, it really tugged at everyone's heartstrings.
Yeah.
Right.
I wish they would have let them cook. Like, I wish they would let them actually do the.
You're right, Gao, too. It's like when Jet Li doesn't have to talk, his physical chemistry is really like both the club dance scene and the swing dance motorcycle murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great chemistry.
Pretty good. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess there is something there that
I'd give them 3.5.
Yeah, I guess on that. Yeah, I'm gonna do 3. You know,
this guy, this fucking guy.
I think even America decided. Well, racist ass America decided they had no chemistry together. but racist ass America decided that the real chemistry was DMX and Jet Li.
Maybe racist ass America thought they had too much chemistry and was scared.
They were afraid of what would happen.
Right. Yeah. It was too powerful. Yeah.
And then I was gonna say, out of cringe, let's see, out of how many briefcase M16s, out of 5 briefcase M16s, which again, the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Pretty close to 5, honestly.
Yeah.
Like horrific dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much so many cultural faux pas.
Yeah.
Like just truly wild.
Yeah, I mean, even based off that opening Amazing Grace line, really
for
a loop. Yeah, we haven't even gotten into the fire hosing of a room full of black people.
The fire hose fight scene was, that wins the award for the do you understand the words that are coming out of our mouths? Ignorance, breathtakingly ignorant award for this movie. It was the most shocking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
not, but come on.
I'm going to say 5. I mean, a solid 5 for the hosing.
I feel like I can't give it a 5 because
you love the hosing
because of Rush Hour. Just because of Rush Hour 3. I'm trying to remember what I said for Rush Hour 3, and I think it's comparable.
I guess I'm
just trying to be consistent with my reviews.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've given anything a 5, so I just feel like my answer is whatever the fuck I said for Rush Hour 3. It's about the same.
Wow, a podcast man of integrity.
Yeah.
And then we've mostly done the dish review. This one, I think this dish, like this, the idea for this dish is doable. And kimchi, spam, macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good combination.
Yeah.
I would have liked ham.
Well, it's not gonna happen. I was trying to go a little more Korean-ish, I guess.
You know, some pancetta would have been great. Oh,
Jessica, wrong culture. The fuck are you talking about?
I really enjoyed the dish. I would eat it again. If you had, you know, if I would have brought my Tupperware, I would definitely snuck one out for me to go with. This is great, but also the coleslaw is what I really want to put on the sandwich.
My note would be, please provide a fried chicken sandwich with the coleslaw next time.
Oh, yeah. I knew I forgot something.
Yeah. That was dumb.
This is a sort of a tangent that make it cut, but like, did we ever do our fried chicken sandwich challenge?
No, we never did.
We still should.
All right. Again, we're just pitching backdoor pilots left and right, Earwolf. So if you want to hear the fried chicken challenge, I guess write in to your local Earwolf.
To your local congressman, Matt Apodaca.
Yeah. He's going to bleep that, isn't he? Anyway, so do we think this experience set the Black and Asian communities back or strengthened what we got going on? Oh, wait, we already said movie. Yeah. The food, sorry. Do we think the food is this an opportunity to improve things between Black and Asian folks?
We're reaching across the aisle with this dish.
Yeah, like the blood's holding up the...
Our go-to.
This speech that liberals want.
Yes.
They're terrified. They're terrified of all the flavor and seasoning.
Jessica, thank you so much for being here. At your own house. Thank you. Thank you for not refusing us entry to your home. We appreciate it.
Is there anything you want people to check out, or you got any plugs you like people to enjoy?
Hell no. I want everyone to enjoy a Garfield comic.
Oh yeah.
I feel like our Garfield love has sort of dropped off in the group chat. Oh,
hey,
fuck.
Man, two out of three everyone of us
here.
Everyone
here is dressed in Garfield except for your ass.
No one told me.
Well,
I don't have to say
anything
of the
game.
Because we just live it.
Just know.
Oh,
live
that
life.
So really what has divided the Black people and the Asian people in this room is the love of loyalty to Garfield.
As usual, it's a white man. Yeah. I assume
it's Jim Davis.
Whatever.
What
close.
The fuck.
I got close.
Well, this is going well. I'm Andrew T.
Ziegler.
Yeah, and my Andrew T.
We got to sound enthusiastic.
Yeah, I'm Andrew T. Thanks for listening. Check me out. My other podcast is called Yo's Is Racist, and Andrew T. on all the socials.
Yes, I do not use social media outside of Instagram, but check out Miles Morales Spider-Man. Read that. Rick and Morty Season 7. That's out. Cut the check.
Do You Understand the Words Coming Out of Our Mouths is produced by Andrew T.
Cody Ziegler.
And Earwolf. Our producer
is Matt Apodaca.
He's right here.
And our engineer is Alex Gonzalez.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it all the way to the end, you're a beautiful person. If you're not hearing this voice, go to hell. Earwolf Presents is produced by Earwolf, Amelia Chapelot, and Cody Fisher. And of course, podcast daddy Colin Anderson himself. The Earwolf Presents series is hosted by the one and only myself, Jacques Neal. And our theme music was engineered and sung by the amazing Jordan Duffy. Special thanks and shout outs to Jeff Gross and Aaron Nestor. And for more information on Earwolf Presents, visit earwolf.com and follow us at Earwolf on all social platforms.